Hello, and welcome to the Development Debrief with Catherine Van Sickle, the stories-based podcast that interviews donors, thought leaders, and professionals in the field of fundraising. This week, I talk with Anna Dugan about her work with next-generation donors at Carnegie Hall. I knew Anna when I lived in New York and attended some events, and since then, she's also moved from New York to now work at Johns Hopkins Medicine. But in this episode, we talk about her time at Carnegie Hall and how she built a pipeline program. She explains why younger donors want more metrics and data, and she talks about why creating a feeling with events must always go back to the mission. Anna Dugan is a frontline fundraiser with a passion for helping people actualize their philanthropic goals. She's currently Senior Associate Director of Development at the Fund for Johns Hopkins Medicine, working with a variety of specialties, including Alzheimer's disease, geriatric psychiatry, community psychiatry, acquired brain injury, and DEIB initiatives. Prior to joining Johns Hopkins, she spent 7 years at Carnegie Hall in a variety of roles, including individual giving fundraising, stewardship, and events. She attended Columbia University, the Juilliard School, and Manhattan School of Music, and performed for many years as a professional musician. Now let's get started. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the debrief.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I should start with congratulating you on your new role. We're going to talk about your experiences at Carnegie Hall, but you're headed to Hopkins. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yes.
What will you be doing?
I will be the Senior Associate Director of Development for the Department of Psychiatry for Johns Hopkins Medicine. So that includes working with psychiatrists and clinicians, cultivating, soliciting, stewarding donors, you know, from their patient pool, but also more generally to support their research, clinical care, community health, and some other initiatives associated with, you know, Johns Hopkins Medicine.
So I like to think that generally it's all the same work and that we all have things to learn across sectors, but I can't help but say that's a big departure from what you've been doing at Carnegie Hall. Maybe you can share with us what you're leaving before we drill into talking about next generation fundraising.
At the end of the day, and this obviously was part of many of my conversations with the doctors and with, you know, senior leadership at Hopkins, you know, philanthropy is really emotional and it is across the board, like you said. And the ways that you kind of cultivate a donor and, you know, bring them into programmatic things or artists or the artistic and executive director of Carnegie Hall is kind of in the same way that you're, you know, leveraging the relationship of a doctor with their patient and kind of making sure those conversations happen and that those asks are appropriate. And there were a lot of what I found in having these conversations, transferable skills and, you know, transferable things with both areas.
Yeah, definitely. So then this is, in a way, the perfect time to reflect on your 7 years at Carnegie Hall, which is a really great run. What will you miss the most?
Very much. I mean, I'm going to miss all of my colleagues. Like you said, it's been 7 years. Many of my donors with whom I have a great relationship, and every concert at the hall feels like it's history. And I think, you know, being at all of those concerts for so many years, seeing, you know, the Vienna Philharmonic in 2021, the week that Ukraine is invaded is history. And I will, you know, I'll miss being a part of that in the day to day and helping make those things happen.
So I know that one of the things you were focused on was attracting the next generation of donors. And that's actually how we met. Was I had a friend who was a donor in the Notables program, who is a donor in the Notables program, and I was able to experience some of your programming. But talk to us about the approach. I mean, this is something that everyone's talking about across sectors, all over our field, is how are we finding, retaining, and growing our next generation?
Yeah, and I feel like everyone manages it a little bit differently or has pivoted over the years. Interestingly, I wouldn't say that Carnegie Hall has changed its approach drastically. I think that it's just gotten more specific during my 4 years specific to this department. What Carnegie Hall tries to do with the Notables program is create an opportunity for young people to get a foot in the door. And more recently, you know, that's more about the accessibility of the program, bring them in for performances that are exclusive. So they have that, you know, that sensibility of being part of something unique and being part of a community, really, you know, and really bringing them in to understand all of the work outside of the musical performances that Carnegie Hall does. Mm-hmm. I mean, to this day, I feel like I could have a conversation with a New Yorker that's lived in this city for years and years and years, and they don't know about the Weill Music Institute and all this, you know, social impact programming, as well as the education work that's not only in the city, it's, you know, it's national and global at this point. So the Notables was really conceptualized to bring people in and then to really spend the time and energy and resources teaching young people what it is to not only be a philanthropist, but to also understand what it is Carnegie Hall does and what it, you know, in its mission.
And with all of the different programs and performances, I do think it's hard to wrap your head around all of the work that is done. How do you best simplify it for people or explain it to them? Or do you think you have to see it to really get it?
I think it's a little bit of everything. For us, specific to the Notables program, we try to focus or feature on a specific program associated with each, you know, touch point. So for example, the spring event, I want to say we focused on NYO Jazz. And how, you know, yeah, the National Youth Orchestra of the United States of America was founded 10 years ago this summer. The NYO Jazz is the third iteration, the third orchestra. But, you know, showing that these young people got access to this no-cost music education for, you know, this unbelievable opportunity to do a residency and then tour through China or tour around the United States or around Europe. And those dollars, those fundraising dollars are going towards programs like that. And, you know, at each opportunity, showcasing a different program so that people get a solid understanding, a solid basic understanding of what each program is and not inundating them with like the breadth that is kind of the bread and butter of Carnegie Hall. We do way more than anyone even knows. So,
yeah. So talk us through the strategy around the Notables program. If I have this right, it's $500 or more that you're giving to Carnegie Hall, and there are different levels. But how are you recruiting people?
I truthfully can't speak to that as well as Victoria. I'm not as engaged with the solicitations and acquisition campaigns for the program these days. A lot of it, you know, ultimately is word of mouth and connecting people through, like connecting through memberships. And over the years, it's changed drastically. We used to do a lot of acquisition campaigns with social media. Social media is still a very active part of how we bring people in the door. But I think so. Basically, the way the program is currently structured is that it starts at $500, then there's a $1,000 membership, and then a $2,000 membership, which is kind of the introduction to being a patron. And that's, you know, the clearest opportunity to see that it is really truly a pipeline program. And so at the $500 level, you have your two cornerstone events during which you learn about our education programs and also get to experience something, a spectacular musical performance. And then, you know, the various touch points like monthly about different concerts, different programs, et cetera. So you're getting kind of this taste of what's going on. And then as you increase your giving, kind of getting more and more engaged with the hall. And at that patron level, that includes patron benefits. So they actually get a sense of, okay, with increased support, you get higher ticket priority, you get invited to a patron dinner, and what that might look and feel like, seeing obviously the tangible benefits associated with increased membership, but also being more engaged with the programming to understand where those dollars are going. Try to think as it relates to additional acquisitions. I think primarily it's been social media and through like strategic prospecting at the higher levels. of late, at least.
I love that you combine the Patron and Notables program on occasion. I think that's really smart. I also think people listening, this could apply on many different levels of just combining donor groups together to get that taste of moving up to the next level.
Yeah. And I think it also helps, you know, people in a different, you know, oftentimes age demographic, see what's being done to bring in young people. Philanthropy has changed drastically over the years. You don't have those, you know, philanthropists from on high who are just cutting checks to different organizations without being deeply, you know, invested in or active in a space. So, you know, what does that look like? How do you kind of incentivize and create the opportunity for someone to really understand what's going on in the brick and mortar and also, you know, virtually through all these different initiatives we all have now, partially as a result of the pandemic?
Right.
I think it's really helpful for, you know, the upper level patrons and even just any patron to see, oh, this is what's being done, because not every organization does it the way that Carnegie Hall does. There are wonderful things about it, and I'm sure there are challenging things about it.
My impression is that Carnegie has invested a lot of money into this program, and I think it speaks to that you have to spend money to make money as well and to invest in the future.
Yes, because where would we be, you know, if we're not investing in the future philanthropists and helping? Honestly, I mean, you're almost teaching them what it means to be a philanthropist in the 21st century. And, you know, how else will that happen? Because it's not, you know, part of your home ec class in school. And it's, some people find it on their own, but others, you know, really, they need to be cultivated really strategically.
What have you found either through observation or anecdotally that is important to younger donors? And when I say younger donors, I think I really mean like 40 and younger.
I think I've kind of gently touched on this, but I would say that philanthropic impact is probably the most obvious and pressing and present thing that I've noticed with younger donors. They want to see metrics. They want data to show how, you know, the efficacy of the programs that they're supporting. They really want to understand where their dollars are going in a way that, you know, even some of the patrons that I would work with for years and years and years, just, you know, they care about Carnegie Hall and they care that their money is supporting this organization and its programs, but they aren't necessarily as invested in the small detail of it all. Another thing that I've very much noticed, as I'm sure you probably have as well, is that particularly during the pandemic, and I think it's still kind of carrying over, young people are drawn towards, you know, social impact programming, current event related causes. A lot of, you know, donors, you know, obviously still want to support arts and culture, but the need for funding in some of those other spheres and the immediacy of that need have kind of taken the focus in that direction pretty strongly.
Have you been able to provide the metrics and follow up that they want and need?
General, I mean, I try to. I have a number of,
right? It's like, how do we pull that data and can we share it? And what does that look like?
So I can speak to this more as it relates to like patrons and major gift donors. I'm very often able to provide that data, understanding that, you know, some of it's publicly available, some of it is not, understanding that, you know, that's by being, you know, by supporting these specific programs to the extent that they do, you know, they have the right to know this information. It's, you know, it is challenging because, you know, how much of a $500 donation is actually able to go towards programs also, you know what I mean? How much of that are we able to, when membership benefits are not necessarily, you know, are fairly robust, when membership benefits are fairly robust, how many dollars are able to actually go towards the programs they want to be supporting? And that's its own, you know, that's its own challenge with running these young donor programs.
Definitely. Although, you know, I've experienced some of them myself. I've gone to some events and I do think part of it is just the gravitas of the institution of being in Carnegie Hall, and you really do feel like you're part of something so much bigger. And like you were saying, the history, like there's a special feeling. But I just know from being in the fundraising world that it's more than a feeling. I know it's a lot of work that goes in. And I just wonder how you talk about that internally when you're planning.
You know, I think we try to, everything we do, we try to ensure that it is still mission driven. And that's a huge part of our event planning, our cultivation planning, everything. At the end of the day, is this in line with the mission of Carnegie Hall and our, you know, also our fundraising goals? And I think that kind of helps inform everything. Like just having a party to have a party doesn't make sense. But, you know, having a, you know, celebration of a program and inviting all of our donors and possibly getting someone to underwrite that, you know, event is something that makes a lot of sense. And being able to create opportunities, not only for people to engage with the music and with the program, but also to engage with one another, mm-hmm. to see what it is like to be a young donor in this space and have these conversations with people who feel as passionately, if not more, about these programs, I think is also really helpful.
I think in working in education, the sort of mindset is once an alum, always an alum. And that's different when it comes to arts and culture, or even maybe the medical world. Have you found that once you do acquire a major donor that they continue on, or are there cycles? Like, how do you work through once they've finished a gift? Do you just ask them for a new commitment, or do you let some time go by?
I think it depends on the size of the gift, and whether it's, you know, a multi-year commitment or a one-year, you know, annual renewable or increased support, and the extent to which, you know, the programming has clearly, you know, not necessarily benefited from the donation, but there's clear success in what we're doing. So when, you know, in that, the stewardship of that gift, I'm able to show them all of these things that we've done in this year, thanks in large part to their wonderful support, right?
Right.
And, you know, kind of go from there. I think that it really is, it's just a thoughtful process. I'm sure you feel the same way. You just have to really be able to read your donor and know what makes sense given where you are with them in that cycle.
Yeah. So really it's specific to the donor.
Yeah. At least in my experience.
Yeah. No, I think that's true. But I do think that there are trends, and I think, you know, we can stand back a few feet and look at them. And I think that that sense of community has got to be huge for you.
Yeah.
At Carnegie. And one of the things that's interesting is like, we're similar in age, and we're in a lot of cases similar in age to our donors. Because I do want to focus on thinking about the next generation and building up the next generation. Do you think that your position and your age where you are in your work has helped you connect with those people? Or do you think it doesn't matter and anyone could approach any donor at any time?
So I probably would have told you years ago that it would matter. I used to joke that to do the notables relationship manager job well, you kind of had to have that notables person sensibility. As you know, I've grown in my position. I've grown at Carnegie Hall. I don't necessarily know if they need to be of the same demographic, you know, whoever is managing those relationships. I think all that's really necessary is that that person, whoever it is, can connect, understand, engage with young donors in a meaningful way. Is it easier perhaps if you're around a similar age? Sure. But I don't necessarily think it's absolutely necessary. At the end of the day, like, you know, my perspective is that we're really just vessels to perpetuate the mission of our organizations, right?
Totally.
And you know, what we're doing is just trying to help people find ways to really realize and then also actualize their philanthropy. And so any person really can do that if that's something that they, you know, want to do or want to do well.
Do you have any advice for people who are tasked with building a next generation pipeline?
Oh, that's a toughie. I think figuring out, you know, what the priorities are in terms of the mission, where it's driven, and how to communicate that mission to, I mean, really anyone, but I think communication strategy specific to young people is a huge part of the job, and kind of go from there, figure out what opportunities are natural for that mission and that organization that will allow you to bring people in and to give them the most, like, the clearest, most open vision of this place so that they are engrossed in it and feel that impetus to support it.
Yeah. And I think often people think that it needs to be different, but I love what you're saying, that no, it should all align from the very mission statement of the organization all the way to the youngest donors and their events and what they're doing. It should all make sense.
Yeah. Because I think that, I mean, often is there are a lot of situations in which that doesn't always happen, where you have parties just to have parties, and that can be really fun. But then when you're dealing with really trans, and that creates a culture of transactional relationships. Mm-hmm. And then when you have a situation like the pandemic and you don't have parties, what happens, you know? And I think that's something that obviously we've always tried to be mission driven, but we did notice that with some of the donors who were really transactional, when we had no events, the membership drop off was, you know, very noticeable. And how do you keep people engaged enough to want to support an organization when there aren't those opportunities? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I'm really excited for your next move and to hear what you learn and discover at Hopkins. But before you do that, I have to ask you, what do you know for sure?
You know, from my perspective, philanthropy is really truly just an emotional thing. And, you know, as a result of that, it takes time to find out what makes a donor tick, what motivates them, and then ensuring that, you know, myself or who, you know, whomever can provide that perfect vehicle to help them actualize their philanthropy. And, you know, that's something that, you know, over my 7 years, and I'm sure many, many more, will just become, you know, I will know that for sure even more. At the end of the day, we're really just trying to make something beautiful.
Thank you so much for joining us and for, in a lot of ways, representing the arts world. I want to have more of these conversations. Maybe you can recommend some future guests, but thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course. Thank you.
Hey, listeners, it's Keith from Evertrue. Evertrue unlocks the potential of your entire donor pyramid. But how? Why, by giving fundraising teams the tools they need to personalize outreach at scale. Wow. And to inspire fundraising teams along the way, we offer Evertrue Studios, advancement's very first media hub. Evertrue Studios is like Netflix, but for advancement. And we publish new podcast and video content every week. It's all free and all created with fundraisers in mind. Subscribe for weekly content from the Development Debrief podcast and other advancement thought leaders at evertrue.com/studios.
I have seen firsthand how Anna makes her donors feel special, and I have had a couple of experiences where the magic really has been alive in the room with Carnegie Hall. I'm sure Anna is accomplishing similar experiences for her communities and constituencies at Hopkins, but in the meantime, I hope this inspired you. I hope that tying the donor participation back to the mission is something that you realize really is a key to meaningful philanthropy. And I hope you have a wonderful 2 weeks, and we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much.